Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Happy, happy Monday, June 5th, 2017. As you just heard from Chael Cervases. I am your host, Al Martin. We've got a great hour of sports talk in store for you all out there. It is going to be a loaded show, as it customarily is each and every Monday, as we will try our best to recap the local weekend in the sporting world and beyond. On today's current sports, we will talk about last night's NBA Finals Game 2, as the Golden State Warriors really look unstoppable right now. I mean, you look at how this series has gone in the first two games, and you would not be crazy to think that this will be a clean sweep for the Golden State Warriors. And if the Warriors do that, of course, they will be the first NBA team in the history of the game to not lose one game in the playoffs. Riveting playoffs, huh? I tell you. We'll break down what we saw in Game 2. You don't want to miss that. How about the Detroit Tigers getting back on track after a lackluster of a road trip, making it look like slight work against the Chicago White Sox at Comerica Park. We'll recap that series. Also, two fewer names that will no longer be a part of the Michigan State football roster. Back-to-back days. Now, Michigan State football with 8 underclassmen that have left since last season. Oh, the negative news continues. My goodness. We'll break down who those names are and why those names decided to chuck up the deuces and go somewhere else. Also, we've got a cool feature from our very own current sports intern, Jacob Herbert, as Jacob chats with Stefan Kubas, who is the associate editor, writer, and photographer for MIHockey.com. He, of course, covers the Detroit Red Wings amongst a slew of other things. Stefan, you will get his thoughts on the NHL playoffs, and he'll look at next season for the Detroit Red Wings. So some hockey talk coming around the 1:30 mark, so stick around for that. And on the back end of the show, we will have weekend winners for you and so much more. If you want to be a part of our airwaves, you know that number. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can go to facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I will read it live here on our airwaves, or you, of course, can join us via social media. Tweet us at currentsports_WKAR. Well, I should say that's the other way around. Mondays, man, at WKAR_sports or at Al Martin WKAR is my Twitter handle. And, of course, you can catch the live stream of the show at facebook.com/currentsports. But, hey, you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, and we begin with the Diamond Classic, which resumes this evening down at Cooley Law School Stadium. The semifinals matchups look like this. Game 1, 5 p.m., you can catch Grand Ledge taking on Holt. And then shortly after that one concludes, you can catch Fowlerville taking on DeWitt at 7 p.m., approximately 7 p.m. Again, Diamond Classic semi starting at 5 at Cooley. And then Wednesday at Kircher Municipal Park, the championship game will get underway at 7 p.m., of course, featuring the winner of those two matchups. Current Sports will be there covering it. All right, Michigan State University. Yeah, the football program losing another player, the eighth underclassman to leave the Spartans since last season's final game. Safety Kenny Like, who played as a true freshie last year, told the Detroit Free Press via text message that he plans to leave MSU and transfer to Mississippi Delta Community College. It was the second straight day the Spartans lost a player, and MSU spokesman confirmed that news on Friday. That third-year sophomore corner-slash-wide receiver Khalil Gaines had left the program. He reportedly plans to enroll at Arizona Western JUCO. Like a 6-foot, 2-inch tall, 187-pound product of Hoffman Estates, Illinois, was a 4-star recruit, according to Rivals.com, and a 3-star, according to 247Sports.com. Again, the 8th, yes, 8th, underclassmen to leave MSU football since last year. We will break down later this hour why that is so. On a much more positive note, MSU picked up a super late commitment for its 2017 football recruiting class on Saturday. Shakur Brown, as in Tupac Shakur, really cool name there, a wide receiver and corner from Woodland High in Stockbridge, Georgia, announced he has committed to join Mark D'Antonio's staff this fall. Brown is considered a 3-star athlete, according to 247 Sports Composite. He committed to West Virginia in January, but never signed with the Mountaineers and kept his recruitment open. Brown also had offers from Minnesota, Purdue, Tennessee, Mississippi, and Kentucky, among others. Brown is 6 feet, 180 pounds. He joins athlete Connor Hayward and defensive back Trey Person as Georgia prospects for the Spartans' 26-player 2017 recruiting class. MSU currently has 6 players for its 2018 recruiting class, which are 4-star linebacker Michael Dowell, of course, brother of Andrew, and, oh, goodness, the other brother is escaping me. Andrew, who's the other brother? What's the other brother named? Isaac, I'm putting you on the spot right now. It's Andrew Dowell.
And then David, right?
Dave, is it David okay. Dowell? I think it is David Dowell, yeah. The Dowell brothers.
Credit to Karina for that
Karina,
one,
thank
actually.
You, Karina Garcia, who's behind the glass for us doing work. But, yeah, that's really cool. So, yeah, you have those brothers joining. Now, Michael, of course, joined the Spartans last week from St. Edward's in suburban Cleveland. 4-star athlete Xavier Henderson and 4-star tight end Trenton Gillison, both from Pickerington, Ohio Central. 3-star quarterback Theo Day from Dearborn Divine Child, who I used to give buckets to back in high school. And 3-star corner Christian Jackson from Georgia and 3-star linebacker Edward Warner from Ohio as well. All right, University of Michigan football coach Jim Harbaugh and his staff are trying their best to beat Ohio State for a top Ohio prospect. Tyreek Smith might be U of M's best shot. Friday night had to be an encouraging sign. Smith, the third-ranked player in Ohio, according to 247 Sports Composite Rankings, showed up at Michigan's satellite camp at John Carroll University in University Heights, Ohio on Friday. He's 6'3", 260 pounds. He was there just to visit. He didn't participate in the camp, I should say, with it being, quote, 3 minutes from his house. He thought it would be a great chance to connect with the U of M coaches, especially defensive line coach Greg Madison, who would be his position coach if he did join the Wolverines. His recruitment list includes 12 schools, and he said the Buckeyes, quote, hit me up every day, 4 times a day, end quote. So if U of M can beat out its bitter rival in landing Tyreek Smith, that would be huge. All right, one of the biggest questions in college basketball recruiting worlds has finally been answered. On Saturday, Brian Bowen, a Saginaw native and 5-star swingman, announced via Twitter that he will play next season, not for Michigan State University, but for Louisville and coach Rick Pitino. Kind of saw that coming, right? The Louisville Courier Journal reported on Thursday that Bowen had already enrolled at the school. That's why we kind of saw that one coming. It ends a long recruitment that in February had Bowen listing Michigan State, Texas, Creighton, Arizona, and North Carolina State as his top choices. But he will be a member of the Louisville Cardinals for the forthcoming years. How about that? All right. The Detroit Tigers. Wow. What a series over the weekend. They finally have done it. The Tigers get a series sweep. Sweeping the Chicago White Sox, Justin Upton smashed a loopy curveball from White Sox closer David Robertson right over the middle of home plate, and he lined it into the left field seats for a walk-off win. A thrilling game yesterday. It was Upton's 11th homer of the season for a 7-4 dub over the White Sox. It was the Tigers' first series sweep of the year for their longest winning streak of the season, as it came at Comerica Park, where their offense has finally clicked for the third straight game since returning on Friday night. Justin Verlander, who threw 72 pitches over two-plus innings, exited early due to right groin tightness. So we'll keep you updated throughout the week on how serious that injury is. But the Tigers, winners of four straight games, finally get a series sweep over the Chicago White Sox. We'll revisit that story in just a moment. The Golden State Warriors just blew right past the Cleveland Cavaliers. Yet again, the Warriors crushed the Cavs 132-113. These final scores of NBA games really blow my mind nowadays. I believe it was like 67-69 at the half. A lot of defense being played. In a game in which both teams had more than 100 possessions, the Warriors used pace as really the lighter fluid on that fire. At one point or another, each of Golden State's players functioned as a ball handler, shooter, screener, keeping the Cavs' defense on its heels. Kevin Durant, he was fantastic last night. A whopping 33 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists. Also, 5 blocks, 3 steals. What a stat line. Also want to note that Steph Curry had a triple-double. LeBron James also had his 8th triple-double in the NBA Finals throughout his career, tying the great Irvin Magic Johnson, but it was not enough, as now the Warriors have a 2-0 series lead. Game 3 will take place on Wednesday, 9 p.m. on ABC. The Cavs trying to use home court advantage to make a comeback, now down in an early hole. And Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Finals will take place tonight at 8 p.m. on NBC. The Pittsburgh Penguins will take on the Nashville Predators at the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, Tennessee. The Predators will surely be looking forward to playing at home tonight, since they are behind 2-1 in the series, trying to knot things up tonight. The Predators defeated the Penguins 5-1 in Game 3, and it was their first win of the series. The city of Nashville was ecstatic, and the Predators will definitely carry that enthusiasm into tonight's game in hopes of tying up that series. Again, we will have more on the Stanley Cup Finals as Jacob Herbert, current sports intern, chats with Stefan Kubis, associate editor, writer, and photographer for MichiganHockey.com. All that and so much more. If you want to be a part of the fun, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, let's start the show.
Well,
you act like I'm just this troubled, guy who's been, in a bunch of trouble and can't control myself, and, Jesus Christ.
You've avoided going over the line, right, to get an ET so far, which is,
You've been waiting
good.
On you waiting on him to go across the line.
No, so I'm interested in what his, how he's been able to do that.
I've just been playing basketball, brother, and when you got great teammates, like I do, who, allow me to play with my emotions and, allow me to be emotional when I'm talking to them and use my emotions to the better for us, it's easy. Going over the edge isn't going to win me a championship. I think I'm a pretty smart guy, and I learned my lesson, So I went over the edge before. Fool me once, you can't fool me twice.
And that is how we start this Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. I am your host, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870. 94.5 FM. What an idiotic question that was posed to Draymond Green, former MSU basketball great who has had a remarkable young, yeah, he's got a lot of basketball left to play, but a remarkable young career already for Draymond Green. A reporter asking him how in the world he has managed to keep his emotions in check and not get technicals. There's a way you can ask that question without offending Draymond, basically making Draymond seem like a lion, an uncaged lion who can't keep his emotions in check, just this crazy cat who is very technical bound, which he's very technical bound. I mean, you look at his track record, right? I mean, Draymond is part of the reason why Golden State did not win that finals last year. But at the same time, you don't. There's a way you go about that, right? There's a way you ask that question. But Draymond took offense to it, as he should have. Interesting game last night, which I'll get to the specifics. We'll get to the specifics of that game later on in the hour because I really don't want to waste my time on a series that's 2-0 and looks like the Warriors right now are going to sweep their way to an NBA championship. I mean, I think, you know, if I have to look at it now, evaluating how these first two games have gone, I think that Cleveland possibly has a slim chance at winning one of the next two, but I'm saying a 5-game series now. I said Golden State in 6. Now I'm going Golden State in 5. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was Golden State in 4. But you know, there's a lot of irony when having this conversation. Again, we'll get to the X's and O's later on this hour, but I want to address two things right now because I found it quite ironic as I watched the last moments of that game last night. Now, I watched LeBron James and actually engineer Isaac Constance and myself. We were texting last night, and there was a moment, and I noted it in my mental, when LeBron went to the bench with 1 minute and 20 seconds left for the third quarter, and he went out, and LeBron looked totally exhausted. And I sat there and said, I don't know what more the man can do. Right, I mean, LeBron had another great game last night. I could have done a few little things better, but at the same time, I mean, LeBron had a triple double last night. Right, dude looked totally tired and exhausted, and it doesn't help that you know Kyrie Irving, the Robin to his Batman, has just been totally hemmed up by that Golden State defense last night. I mean, what more do you want LeBron James to do, right? But for the first time throughout this year's playoffs, we have seen LeBron James fatigued, huffing and puffing, sweat coming down. He just looked a bit helpless. And that's exactly what he was as the fourth quarter began and it ended with a whiff, right? And you saw LeBron go into the locker room a bit dejected. And also, come on, ABC. The camera, did you see what happened, Isaac? The cameraman for ABC, there was like this WWE style brawl happening right next to LeBron James as he walked to the locker room. And I'm sitting there with my grandmother and my sister and we're watching it, right? And I'm watching the game and I'm like, what are you guys doing? What stay on that. That's more exciting than the game. I mean, it was like, I don't know what, I think like The Rock was about to come out and rock bottom somebody, yeah. Isaac. It looked crazy. It was a big brawl that was going to happen. And then they go to Doris Burke as she proceeds to interview Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. But anyway, you see LeBron go to the locker room. And what really got under my skin, though, LeBron James, the best player on the planet. And we've heard all this chatter, right? About LeBron chasing Michael's ghost, and he's trying to be the GOAT, and, you know, he's putting up all these crazy numbers, right? But I've always believed this firmly. You know, whenever you lose, no matter what, there's standard protocol that happens after the game where you have to talk to the press. And I saw this story this morning, and LeBron is getting really trashed by multiple media members and sources out there, and justifiably so. Because there's something called quorum. And after the game, LeBron was scheduled, Isaac, to go on the podium and talk to the press. But you know what LeBron did? LeBron reportedly was not happy with the media post-game schedule So you know what he did? He did a media scrum, which, if you don't know what a media scrum is or how it works, you guys have seen it multiple times before when you're tuning in to SportsCenter and listening to athletes talk while sitting at the locker room. You have basically a bunch of cameras, a bunch of recorders, audio recorders, and just a bunch of people around one person trying desperately to get a hand in, and cameras trying desperately to find some sort of usable angle as this said person throws out quote after quote after quote. LeBron James, one of the most popular athletes, not here in the United States of America, but in the entire world, trying to do a media scrum with LeBron James? Impossible, folks. But he decided, you know what? I don't like the schedule. I am so ticked off. I am just going to do my post-game press conference, media scrum style, in the NBA Finals by my locker room. That got under my skin. I didn't like that at all. I mean, LeBron, come on, dude. That's you being just a crybaby now. Just man up, do the press conference. You lost, face the music, go home, and prepare for game three. Didn't like that at all. Those were my two riffs, the two things that really got under my skin. The reporter, whoever asked Draymond Green that idiotic question concerning his technicals and how he's been able to keep his emotions in check, right? And not so much the question, but the way he asked it was just, come on, dude. Like, really? And then LeBron being a crybaby and saying, no, we lost. I don't like your schedule. I'm going to do my post-game press conference right here in my locker room. Oh, but what do you think? Again, we're going to get to the finals later on this hour. I want to know your thoughts on it. And if anyone out there who says that the Golden State Warriors right now, undefeated, two games away from another NBA championship, anyone out there who says that this is good for the NBA is oh so wrong. And I'll tell you why later this hour. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I'll let you chime on this real quick, Isaac. I mean, did LeBron just, I hated that when I saw that. I'm like, come on, dude. It's a press conference. So what, you don't like the schedule? You're on the schedule. You're paid to do this. Just do it and get it out the way, dude.
Yeah, entirely. It's entirely innocuous to go answer a couple questions from media members. If there's a stupid one, you answer it like you did. I mean, LeBron got some flack for answering a bad question directed towards him that was something along the lines of, what if you don't defend home court, suggesting what if you lose the games at home? LeBron essentially chirped back, you're a smart guy. What happens if we lose two games? I mean, it was a good answer.
That, did you like that answer for that?
I actually liked the answer. Yeah. I didn't think it was humiliating or emasculating. I just thought it was a simple, that's a stupid question. Let's move on. I've got no problem with that whatsoever. But the thing is, you have a contract as a player. And I'm pretty sure that when you read the fine print, some of that is handling press responsibilities, talking to media members. So win or lose, no matter what time it is, you've got a plane to catch. I understand that, but I'm pretty sure it's not the reason that he decided to cancel his press conferences that he was going to miss the plane or something like that. Mm-hmm. He simply did not want to answer all those questions in a public live forum right afterwards. No, dude, that's your responsibility. After a loss, after a win, after the worst game of your life, you still go out there just the same. I had a problem with that as well, and I thought that was exactly what you're going to say. I'm happy you said it like you did.
Face the music. You got to face the music, man. I remember when, a lot of people forget this too. You know when Jordan came back from playing baseball, and a lot of people forget when he rocked number 45, and they went up against
18 games.
Yep, and they played the Orlando Magic and got eliminated. Jordan didn't see the guy, and I forget what player it was in back of him. I want to say it was Nick Wright who stole the ball when Jordan wasn't looking and the series ended and Shaq and the Orlando Magic move on. But yeah, a lot of people forget that Jordan, when he came back, he didn't win an NBA championship immediately that following year. But I remember Jordan, you know, was he ticked off? Yeah. But he went in front of everybody and answered every single question and then said, I'll see you guys next year. And then he went on to win three more NBA championships. But yeah, it's something called standard decorum, LeBron. He's playing his heart out, though. It's just and also another point, the other point I wanted to make, Isaac, is that it's funny to me because watching LeBron go against this super team and he's giving it all he's got, But at the end of the day, we all know right now that Golden State is probably going to pull this thing out. I think that's the general consensus. But, you know, LeBron is kind of a product of this because LeBron was the first big name to say, I am going to take my talents to South Beach and link up with D-Wade and Chris Bosh and form that super team and win rings, which he did. And now you have Kevin Durant, who basically followed in LeBron's footsteps. And now LeBron is trying to beat a super team. I think that is pretty ironic, right?
There's an irony here. There certainly is. And LeBron started off by going to the Heat. I thought KD's move escalated this to a whole nother level, joining the best team in the regular season in NBA history.
I thought it was worse than LeBron.
Me too.
Yeah.
But at the same time, no, LeBron James is now facing the monster he created. And there's nothing you can do but watch. And if he pulls this out somehow, it'll be the most valiant finals win ever. But let's face it, probably five games, maybe six if they're lucky, possibly a sweep.
Yeah, possibly, man. Again, I want to note, I want to throw out there, the Diamond Classic resumes later this afternoon, 5 p.m. at Cooley Law School Stadium. So if you're driving out to Kircher Municipal Park, you don't want to do that because you will see absolutely no one there. Okay, Cooley Law School Stadium, the home of the Lansing Lugnuts, is where but the doubleheader for tonight's matchup, semifinal matchups, will take place again. Grand Ledge versus Holt at 5 p.m. I see a few of our listeners wanting to know when those times are and what the teams are. Grand Ledge versus Holt at 5 p.m. and Fowlerville versus DeWitt at 7 p.m. The winner of both of those games, the winners of both of those games, will move on to the championship game, 7 p.m. That will be at Kircher Municipal Park Wednesday. All right, moving along. I want to bring up the Detroit Tigers because I want to tip my cap to them for what they were able to do over the weekend. I actually got a chance to check out the Tigers at Comerica Park in person. Yeah, that's right. I was at the Detroit Tigers game on Friday night. Very cool stuff as the Detroit Tigers now finally get a sweep over a team throughout the regular season. Again, a bit bittersweet when looking at what took place yesterday as Justin Verlander left the game with right groin tightness. But get this, the Detroit Tigers throughout the course of this weekend outscored the Chicago White Sox 32-10. Oh, it was a trouncing, folks. In the game I went to on Friday, the final was 15-5. Actually left a bit early in that game because there was no point in sticking around and watching it, okay? Well, I guess it was because they did have fireworks at the end, but that was about it. That's the only reason why a lot of fans decided to keep their butts in the seats on Friday night. But wow, 15-5 on Friday, on Saturday 10-1, and then yesterday a much closer game, 7-4 the final, but a win nonetheless. Again, that amounts to a 32-10 differential. When you evaluate that series, the Tigers have reached double digits in three of their last six games. They are now 15-10 at Comerica Park, and you look at some eerie numbers here. I found this to be quite intriguing when watching FSD late last night. The Detroit Tigers have reached the 500 mark for the first time since May 21st, when they were 21-21. Get this, they were 500 at this point in the season last year as well. On June 5th, this exact day, last year, June 5th of 2016, the Tigers were 28-28. They were 500 as well last year. And oh, get this, they also were 28-28 in 2015 as well. Crazy. So on this day, on June 5th, the last 3 years, the Tigers have been 500 and an identical 28-28 in both 2016 and 2015. Last year, the circumstances eerily familiar, right down to actually Justin Verlander pitching in the series finale against Chicago to finish a sweep. That's eerie stuff, Isaac. I don't know, man. I look at stats like that and I say, what is going on here, man? That's like some Friday the 13th stuff, dude.
Yeah, that is eerie. And the Justin Verlander exit with injury was an eerie component of that as well. When he exited, Tigers fans must have felt like, you were rewinding the track back to 2014, 2015, and revisiting the past, something that you probably don't want to do if you're Detroit right now.
No, because they didn't make the playoffs the last 2 years, right? As far as the health of JV moving forward, Brad Ausmus did weigh in on that on Sunday, and he said there is no reason to believe that JV would miss his next scheduled assignment, which will be on Friday at Boston, and the team will likely use this off day today to give him an extra day of rest, pending the results of an MRI. So it's not expected, knock on wood, to be anything serious, but the Tigers oh so desperately needed this because it was a rocky road trip. They have played quite well, though, at home, above 500, as I mentioned, 15-10. We'll see if they can get things rolling as they open up a 3-game set tomorrow versus the LA Angels. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will throw to a chat with our very own current sports intern, Jacob Herbert, and Stefan Kubis, who is the associate editor, writer, and photographer for MIHockey.com. Stefan and Jacob will talk Stanley Cup Finals and a season outlook for the 2017-18 Detroit Red Wings. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Isaac, we've got some breaking news concerning a certain basketball coach in the Big Ten Conference, right?
Yeah, we do. Very big news right here. According to 247 Sports, in fact, Ohio State's Thad Matta has one more season to coach. He's 49 right now, but after this season, it appears, he will retire from the game due to health concerns.
That is very, very young. Very young for coach. I mean, you don't see, I mean, normally you see coaches, I mean, just look at Tom Izzo. I mean, coaching into their 60s, some even into their 70s and beyond. And Thad, does it say what the health concerns are?
I'll have to read the full article for that, just seeing the headline right now, but we'll certainly bring that information to light once it comes about.
All right. Thank you, Isaac. Again, if you want to be a part of today's show, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. We began segment A by briefly touching on the NBA Finals, which looks to be quite an easy road for the Golden State Warriors, as many people believe now, as the Warriors just did away with the Cavs quite easily in games 1 and 2. A lot of people believe that the Warriors will now coast to the NBA championship this year. And it's been a complaint all season, really, when evaluating the landscape of the National Basketball Association. Parity, parity, parity. That is the issue now, because every single year, heck, at the start of this year, everybody knew it was going to come down to two teams, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. One reason why I really love the NHL playoffs is because it's hockey and anything can happen in the game of hockey. I mean, we see this year a team in the Nashville Predators, a team that not many people thought was going to make it to this point. Also a team that has the opportunity tonight to tie up things against Pittsburgh in Game 4. So, our very own Jacob Herbert, who is a hockey nut in his own right, he actually covered the Michigan State hockey program for Impact Sports this past year and now joins the WKAR staff as a summer intern. Jacob had a chat with a man who certainly knows his hockey. His name is Stefan Kubis. He is the associate editor, writer, and photographer for MIHockey.com. Jacob chatted with Stefan about this year's Stanley Cup Finals, and starting off the convo, he asked Stefan what he thinks about the parity, especially when evaluating this year's Stanley Cup Finals, and whether or not parity has brought a few more eyeballs to this year's NHL playoffs.
Oh, absolutely. I even think Gary Bettman was saying in his press conference at the Cup Final that the Game 7 between Ottawa and Pittsburgh was the highest viewed in Canada in some time. So even here, though, I mean, it's a city like Nashville that's, you know, they've gone crazy for their Predators. They've really embraced the team. And, you know, we've seen something like 27 overtime games already, and just one shy of the record. I mean, that just speaks to the parity. I mean, Ken Holland, I remember him saying in his end of season press conference, you know, all you need to do is make the playoffs, and once you're in, you know, anything can happen conceivably. So I think we saw that in Ottawa and in Nashville. Who Nashville was the lowest seed for the whole postseason. So, yeah, it's been really exciting to watch, and you know, this final's been just as good despite it being a 2-0 edge right now.
Yeah, just getting into the finals a little bit, despite being down. You know, as they are in the Stanley Cup Finals, the Predators, I don't know, maybe in my opinion, have seemingly dominated large stretches of this game and just the run or of the series, excuse me. But just their run to get here is equally as impressive. I mean, they swept Chicago in the first round. They only gave up 3 goals, and they got by St. Louis and Anaheim fairly easily. They lost 2 games to St. Louis and then 2 games to Anaheim. What do you make of their run and how impressed are you by it?
Well, you know, it's been really good. Yeah, before the season, you look at Nashville's roster and you think that's a team that can do damage. You know, unfortunately, things happen during the season. Maybe, you know, it doesn't go quite as they planned. But, you know, again, if you just get in, you know, they're proving that anything can happen. If the team gels at the right time, that's all that matters in the playoffs. You know, you got to catch fire at the right time. And, you know, I think that's what the Preds are doing right now. They got good goaltending in the first 3 rounds. You know, Pekka's kind of been struggling against Pittsburgh. I don't think he's actually won a game against them in his career. So that's something that the Predators are going to hope to change at home, where, you know, they've been really good all postseason. I think they're something like 9-1 at Bridgestone Arena. So that place is going to be rocking. And, you know, I think in the first 2 games, they were the better team with the exception of maybe a period or two. So, you know, they're going to need that home crowd behind them in Game 3. I know PK Subban came out and said that, you know, he's pretty much guaranteeing a win tomorrow. So we'll see what happens. Needless to say, I think Nashville needs that one to get back into this.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned Pekka a little bit there. He has had a tough Stanley Cup Finals. Game 1 saw him give up 4 goals on just 11 shots. Pittsburgh only had 12 shots total in the entire game. And then Game 2, he gave up the 4 goals on 25 shots. If you're Peter Laviolette, if you're behind the bench, do you stick with Rene or do you go with Saros, who had to come in late in Game 2?
I think definitely you have to stick with Rene. He's the guy that got you there. He was outstanding in the first 3 rounds. Posting save percentages well over 900, just lights out the whole time. And, you know, it's funny, I was looking at Game 2, and there was a few goals. I mean, the Malkin 2-on-1, you know, that's just an absolute bullet of a shot. Not much he could do about that one. Another one went off their own player's skate. Get Jake Guentzel's first goal. You know, he's in perfect position against the post. He moves his glove for a split second, the puck sneaks through. I mean, it's just, I don't know, I don't want to call it bad luck necessarily, but it's, you know, it's been a tough go for him against Pittsburgh. So, again, they've been so good at home. I think Rene deserves a chance with the home crowd to, you know, to get another shot at it.
How do you think he turns this around? Is it just a matter of kind of letting it go and getting it out of your head? Is that all it comes down to?
Yeah, I think you got to move on from those two. You know, you got to move on and pretend Game 3 is just, you know, it's a clean slate. You know, the first 10 minutes are going to be interesting. They, you know, if Nashville can really embrace the home crowd and establish dominance early, that's going to be huge. Rene really hasn't had a chance to play with a lead much. So I think if Nashville can get a lead, you know, they're playing in front of one of the best goalies in the world. So, I think they'll be fine. I think Rene will bounce back in Game 3 and 4 and, we'll see what happens from there.
Moving over to the Pittsburgh side of things, like I mentioned earlier, Nashville has seemingly dominated large stretch of the series. Going back to Game 2, both Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin were held shotless in the first 40 minutes of that game, and the power play was 0-for-7, and they still won that game. How much of Pittsburgh's series lead do you contribute to luck, and how much of it is just pure skill and talent of them being the defending champs?
I think a lot of it, you know, even though they're not getting shots and then the power play's struggling, you know, they find ways to get it done with their depth. You know, you look at a guy like Jake Guentzel, who's only 22, and he's got, you know, 12 goals. You know, they're finding ways to with other guys to chip in. You know, the star players, you know, they do have to be better. Phil Kessel's been great for him. He's got, you know, 20 points in 21 games. He's been a point-per-game player in the playoffs his whole career. Though they're going to need more out of those guys going forward, because in the first 2 games, Nashville really took it to them, and they were able to stifle those guys.
You mentioned Jake Guentzel. He is close to tying Dino Cicerelli's rookie record, for goal scoring in the playoffs. And the majority of his goals have come in the third period or later, and he's been a big reason they're up in this series. Is he the favorite for the Conn Smythe, in your opinion, or did you have any other names in mind?
He's been lights out. I got to look at Evgeny Malkin, his overall body of work in the playoffs. I think Malkin's got something like 24 points leading the whole postseason in scoring. Jake Guentzel's been a great player at every level that he's played at. He's been a point-per-game player pretty much since his junior days in the USHL. So, he's scoring big goals for him right now. Sometimes, in the playoffs, it's such a short-term thing. You just need to catch fire for a little bit, and that's what Guentzel's doing. I'd also throw Matt Murray's name in there. He won a cup for him last year, and he took over for Fleury, and that's not easy to do mid-playoffs, coming off an injury, too. So, it's kind of bizarre. Matt Murray could be the first goalie since 1982 to win two cups by the end of his rookie season, which is really bizarre. But, I think Matt Murray's been incredible for them, too. What I've really liked about his game is he doesn't get rattled by much. He stays calm between the pipes. He's just focused on making that next save and, given the Penguins a chance in front of them, especially with a decor that's, depleted with injuries. So,
yeah, I was actually on a Current Sports with Al. I believe it was actually on Thursday, and he posed this question to me about Jake Guentzel being a favorite for the Conn Smythe. And I also brought up Matt Murray, and I think, in my opinion, Matt Murray has just as much or deserves just as much credit for Pittsburgh being up in this series as Jake Guentzel was. And, I wanted to ask you a couple questions about him. He did miss a large chunk of the playoffs, like you mentioned, due to injury. He came back in that Ottawa series, and he's been very impressive since, especially in the Stanley Cup final. Game one, he's only given up 3 goals on 26 shots. Game two, he only gave up the 1 goal, which took an incredible individual effort to get that goal on 38 shots. How much of Pittsburgh's success in the series does he deserve the credit for?
Oh, a boatload. Especially with their defensive core, they're missing Chris Letang. You look at a guy like Trevor Daley, who's, one of their top two defensemen, he'd be a 4-5-6 guy in any other team pretty much. Especially against a team like Nashville, who has a loaded decor, on the contrary. So, Matt Murray's been absolutely incredible. Like you said, he's poised between the pipes, and for a young goalie, that can be really tough. So, I really like Pittsburgh. You get with a 2-0 lead, you got to like Pittsburgh's chances with Matt Murray back there. He's already won him a cup. He knows the pressure and what comes with being a cup champ. So. You got to like Murray between the pipes for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, definitely. He certainly has fared well for them back there. Speaking of the Penguins, they are looking to repeat as Stanley Cup champs, and I'm sure you and I both know, the last team to do that was the Detroit Red Wings back in 97-98. Do you see any similarities between today's Penguins team and that 97-98 Wings team?
Ooh, yeah, they definitely have a lot of star power. There's no doubt about that. It's tough because back then, it wasn't the salary cap era, and Detroit or any other team for that matter could virtually go out and sign whoever they wanted and pay them however much they wanted to. There's a fair amount of Hall of Famers on that team, and up front you gotta like a Pittsburgh. That's how they're gonna get it done. They're superstars up front, and like Detroit in 97-98, they had a lot of star power. I think Detroit had better depth back then, but again, that speaks to the salary cap and the freedom that was allowed back then.
Speaking of the Red Wings, they are, after missing the playoffs for the first time in 25 years, they seem to be in a rebuild-type mode. And I know this might be kind of a loaded question. It seems like they have a lot to do. Let's just say you're Ken Holland. How do you get this team back to the dynasty they once were? Where do you start with this rebuild?
Well, they do have some good prospects coming up in the pipeline. Tyler Bertuzzi looks good. Evgeny Svechnikov. On D, they got, Phil Peronik and Ville Saarijärvi. I think right now the key for them is just to keep reloading the pipeline. And, you look at a team like Pittsburgh, who's in it now, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they were in bad shape until they got Crosby and started drafting these names and letting these guys develop. And I don't think Detroit's that far removed from the playoffs, honestly. They need help on defense, that's for sure. if they could move a forward perhaps to get a defenseman, that would probably make a lot of sense. Between the pipes, you know, you don't know what's going to happen with Jimmy Howard. He could be picked up by Vegas with the expansion draft or potentially moved, assuming, you know, Peter Mrazek will be protected, being the younger goaltender. So there's certainly work to do. Unfortunately, there's not a lot in the way of free agency anymore. A lot of it's got to come from within, you know, whether that's prospects coming up and developing or, you know, even the players that are in the lineup now taking steps further. You know, guys like Gustav Nyquist, Tomas Tatar, you know, they kind of took steps back this past season. And, you know, you need guys like that to step up. And even Dylan Larkin and Anthony Mantha and Andreas Athanasiou, those guys need to take steps forward in becoming elite players in the league.
So you think it should be a matter of just kind of, you know, being patient and building with what you have through the pipeline, or do you think that free agency might be an option to consider for Ken Holland?
I think you really got to go through the pipeline these days. You know, it's possible to swing a trade or two, but free agency, it's very slim pickings these days. And, you know, there's the days of the big-name superstars in free agency are over. I mean, everybody was expecting Steven Stamkos last offseason to be a name out there. And, you know, a day or two before free agency hits, he signs a deal and stay with Tampa. And all of a sudden the market just thinned out. So there's good support pieces in free agency, but not, you know, there's no cornerstones. Those all have to come from within the organization and through drafting and developing. So, you know, in a couple weeks here when the draft hits, it'll be an exciting day for those following the Wings.
You briefly mentioned the Golden Knights, and they actually have an expansion draft coming up in just a couple of weeks. What Red Wings, if any, do you see the Golden Knights looking at, and who do you think the Wings will definitely be protecting?
Well, that's tough to say. You gotta look at, I think, who will be available. It'll come down to, you know, like a Luke Glendening or a Riley Sheahan. You know, I can't see the Wings leaving Darren Helm exposed. So I think one of those two forwards could be, you know, good depth players for Vegas. You know, on defense, it's tough, you know, who they're going to protect. You know, they got the likes of Xavier Ouellette and Ryan Sproul and Nick Jensen. You know, then they've got Cronwall and Erickson and Mike Green. So obviously George McPhee has a history with Mike Green, and he's making $6 million only for one more year. So I don't know if that's something that the Wings will, you know, throw out there for him, or if, you know, Vegas decided to go for a forward. And then you got the goaltending situation even. Does Vegas take Jimmy Howard? You know, that's tough to see. They're in the expansion draft throws a pick onto a lot of teams' plans this offseason. And I think we'll have a lot more clarity on where things stand once that's completed.
Who do you see? I know this is kind of a tough question to answer, but who do you see the Wings protecting? Would it be Howard or would it be Mrazek?
I think it's got to be Mrazek. I just think there's more potential there. There's more upside. You know, Howard's been, you know, he's been good for the Wings for a while. You know, but when you look at the age gap between the two, it's, you know, it just makes too much sense to keep Mrazek. And Mrazek's been good. I think he just needs, you know, he needs more seasoning, more games, and a better defense in front of him, quite frankly. Even up front, he was never getting a ton of goal support either. The Wings are one of those teams that struggle to score goals. So overall, the whole team needs to take steps forward to, in turn, help their goaltending. But I think Mrazek will be the guy going forward for sure.
Yeah, I'm certainly looking forward to this expansion draft. It's a Stanley Cup Finals aside, it's a very exciting time. That's all the time we have for this interview. Stefan, I appreciate you coming on to talk to us.
Oh, I appreciate it, Jacob. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Great chat. Much thanks to Jacob Herbert and Stefan Kubis for coming on and really giving us thoughts on the Stanley Cup Finals between the Nashville Predators and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Big game tonight because Nashville has an opportunity to knot things at two games apiece in Nashville, so home ice advantage for the Predators tonight. That puck drop will happen at 8 p.m. on NBC. Isaac, what do you think? Real quick prediction here. I think the Predators tie things up tonight.
You do? Okay, I'm going with the Penguins. I just like that veteran experience. I like the savvy on that team. I think that they're going to break everyone's hearts because I am for the Predators, I'll admit, happily. But at the same time, no, I think this is the Penguins series to lose still.
Yeah, it's amazing to me when you evaluate the stats, and you heard Stefan, you know, hit on it in the first two games, how there was such a big shots on goal differential in those first two games, yet Pittsburgh was still able to come out with those first two games. So we'll see what happens tonight. Again, 8 p.m. on NBC. Game four between Pittsburgh and Nashville. It's in our final break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's current sports by hitting you with weekend winners. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We have under 10 minutes left in this Monday edition of Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870 94.5 FM. I am your host, Al Martin. And let's end today's show like we do each and every Monday as we try to look at the weekend that was in the sporting world and beyond and bring to you who we thought had the best weekend in the world of sports. We dub it Weekend Winners.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around.
All right, time for weekend winners. So who exactly had the best weekend in the sporting world, locally and beyond? Well, my numero uno may surprise many of you, and I know it's specifically going to surprise Isaac Constance.
No, it's not. I know where you're going. You're trying to surprise me, but I know exactly where you're going. Overseas.
Real Madrid, man. 4-1 over Juventus in the Champions League final. I saw the highlights, and I saw Cristiano Ronaldo celebrating. And there was this big debate about, you know, who is, like, the greatest at their respective sport. And they had this debate between LeBron and Ronaldo and, oh, boy, who is the third? Oh, Serena Williams. Her name was brought up. Mm-hmm. And there's someone else I'm forgetting. There's a fourth name I'm forgetting, but you got to look at what Ronaldo.
Tom Brady, maybe?
No, not Tom Brady. It was not Tom Brady, but you got to look at what Ronaldo is doing in the sport of soccer, and you have to tip your cap. It is truly remarkable, and I wouldn't have known about the Champions League final if it was not for Isaac bringing it up last week. But I saw it. It was a big story, big win for Real Madrid. I had to steal a bit of your thunder there because I thought it'd be funny to do that. So,
it is, and I'm actually going kind of off the normal beaten trail as well for mine, because somebody who hasn't gotten as much acclaim and attention for this as I thought actually would, everybody forgot about him. Forgot about Al, in fact. Albert Pujols hitting 600 home runs with the Angels. He's had kind of a injury-riddled career with them ever since moving over from St. Louis. But 600, I mean 600, that's 9 people in that club. 6, actually, in the last 15 years. So Albert Pujols becoming the newest enshrined member of that is really something special. And the guy is, I believe, about 37 right now. Not saying that he's going to catch up to Bonds, but he might get to 700. He's right on the cusp of that.
Okay, I like that. That's a good pick. Also, Hank Williams Jr. is one of my weekend winners, seeing as though Hank Williams Jr., he is really the name and voice that I used to hear back in the day each and every Monday night, right before Monday Night Football would kick off. He did the "Are you ready for some football?" That song, I used to love that song. It used to get me so pumped on Monday night. He is coming back to sing the Monday Night Football theme song with a 2017 twist on it. So congratulations to Hank getting his job back. I forget. I don't know who took over that spot. Who'd they have like back in the day?
Was that Carrie Underwood?
Carrie Underwood was Sunday night. She was Sunday Night Football because that was with NBC. I can't remember who used to sing that song on Monday Night Football now. Wow. I have to do some research on that. But now it's great that Hank is coming back. And also I want to shout out the Detroit Tigers, what a weekend it was for them. Again, finally, we see a series sweep for the Tigers against their opposition, doing so by scoring 32 runs over the weekend, just annihilating the Chicago White Sox. This is exactly what they needed. Now, again, don't look too far into the crystal ball when just evaluating where they are at this point here on June 5th, 2017. Still a lot of baseball left to play. Again, they were 500 the last 2 years, and they didn't make the playoffs the last 2 years around this time as well. And, yeah, I got to give a shout-out to the Golden State Warriors, dude. It is truly remarkable what this team is doing, Isaac. LeBron James needs help, and he needs it now.
I'm going to go keeping on baseball, actually. Houston Astros, they've won their last 10 straight, and they are blowing everybody else out of the park. Yeah. I mean, the Houston Astros, 41-16 right now. Jose Altuve, all of those guys. It's a young core that I think can continue to flourish and prosper going forward. And they're capitalizing on the missteps of last year's World Series competitors, both the Cubs and the Indians, still kind of trying to find their footing this season. Baseball, you want to talk about parity. Baseball's got it this year, and I also didn't expect the Yankees to be in the position they are right now either.
Yeah, you look at right now the Astros, and they completely own the American League right now. It's really remarkable what they're doing. All right, well, we are out of time. I want to forward promote briefly here before we bid you all adieu. Again, much thanks to Isaac Constance. Of course, we had Stefan Kubis on today's show. Jacob Herbert, an outstanding job with that interview. Later on this week, tomorrow, actually, we will have Danton Cole, head coach of the Michigan State hockey team, live on our airwaves. You don't want to miss that chat. And also, as the week moves on, Karina Garcia, current sports intern, she will bring a very cool feature to the forefront concerning former Michigan State football players and where they are now, specifically when it comes to those who have struggled to try and make it in the NFL and possibly even the CFL. What happens when that dream all of a sudden disappears? She will explain later on this week. She'll be chatting with Isaiah Lewis, actually, former MSU football player, not too far removed from campus, actually. All right, folks. Well, we have to bid you all adieu. We'll see you same time, same place tomorrow. As always, take care and be easy, people.